Have you ever watched a crazy or wild documentary on Netflix and thought about how you'd love to ask them more about their story? Well, that's what today's episode will be for you.
We've heard your request loud and clear, and we're here to deliver. In response to the feedback from the 2023 Queer Money Podcast Survey, where many of you expressed interest in hearing personal finance stories from non-experts in the field, we bring to you an incredible tale of resilience and empowerment.
Yeah, today we're honored to have Stephanie Niblock with us, sharing her remarkable journey through overcoming adversity and reclaiming control over her life and finances. Stephanie courageously escaped from a restrictive cult that sought to confine her to a life of subservience to a man.
Through a combination of financial empowerment and determination, Stephanie transformed her life, achieving both economic independence and personal freedom. She graciously shares her story, highlighting the challenges she faced along the way and the individual lessons that she learned.
Stephanie graciously offers actionable insights and advice to enhance our lives and financial well-being. This is Queer Money episode 502, and we're thrilled to dive into this empowering story. You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
So welcome to the Queer Money Podcast, Stephanie Niblock. I hope I said it that correctly there.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. You were sharing with us earlier before we started recording that you have been a longtime listener of the podcast. And it's always exciting for us to have folks on the podcast who've actually listened to the podcast, because it's kind of, for us, it's kind of almost like a full circle, right? We are engaging with the people that we are trying to share this message of LGBTQ financial stability and wealth building with. And so it's exciting to that you reached out to us and said you would love to share your money story on the podcast. Digging into some of the information that you shared with us before so we could kind of prepare for this show, I did find it interesting that you shared with us that you grew up in a cult. And folks, for those of you who have not been listening to the podcast for very long, I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness. I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness. So I also feel like I grew up in a cult. So maybe you can share what that means with us and our listeners, what it means to you to have been raised in a cult and what kind of impact that has had.
Well, it feels normal, right? When you're growing up, it's just how you're raised, and you don't know that it's different until a lot of times after the fact and you're actually out. And so for me, what that looked like is it was kind of a triad of organizations. It's probably not something that's very well known. The closest thing I was always able to point to that the public would know of was the Duggar family, 19 kids into counting, and the Institute of Basic Life Principles. So last, I think it was June, there was a documentary that had come out about the Institute. And so that's the closest thing that I can really point to, because we were involved in that organization. And then there was a spinoff of the IBLP called Vision Forum, which I think is pretty much gone out of existence at this point. And then my family also believed in believes in a prophet. His name was William Branham. And he was an evangelist in the 60s, early 70s. And he never claimed to be a prophet, but they believe him to be. And so that's closest public thing that I can really count to. You know, I'm the oldest of 12. I had never cut my hair. I was only allowed to wear long dresses and skirts. I couldn't work outside of the home unless it was for my father or eventually my husband, my place in the world. I was always taught that my place was to be a helpmate, to be a good wife and a good mother. And that was the entire purpose on this planet for me, was to help others in that family role.
Yeah, misogyny times 100, right? It's just...
Oh, yeah.
Was there a name for your cult, or like, you know, like Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Catholics?
No, not really. There was the Institute of Basic Life Principles, and then the Message is what they kind of called the church that believed in the prophet. Gotcha. But if you asked them what they were, they would always say that they were non-denominational.
Oh, gotcha. That sounds very... passing.
I do remember, because of my background, I'm always interested in those kind of stories being told on in media, the stories of ex-cult members and things like that. And I remember when we watched that documentary and I was just like, wow, I thought I had it bad. I looked at some of the things that were going on, and I know that there are varying levels within all cults, right? There's people who are close to the edge and there are people who are at the center and they're the infection infecting everybody. And I watched that and I was like, whew, thank God my life wasn't that bad, because that is really effed up, you know? And I guess I would say, you know, speaking up from a place of male privilege, you know, being born and identifying as a man or as a boy, I probably had it easier than other women in as who are Jehovah's Witnesses. But what was it like? I mean, tell us a little bit about your early life and how that affected you, knowing that you might be a queer person or identify as LGBTQ.
So I will tell you the story, but before I dive into that, it's interesting that you bring up the male privilege part of it, because I had always, because of, you know, not being able to do really anything as a female, I had always wished that I was born a boy. I felt like I should have been born male, just because I'm a Leo. I have a lot of things that I want to do with my life, and I didn't want to just settle into this pre-made role that was created for me. And now I always thought that the guys had it easier. And now as an adult and starting to hear some of their stories, like they were put through a lot too, expectations that they had, because, you know, my brothers are expected to take over the businesses and make a lot of money because my dad is very wealth driven. And so he had come from a place of poverty where he was the second of five. And they grew up in the backwoods of Arkansas on food stamps. And so he has developed this money status type of relationship with money, where he feels like his value as a person and how much money he makes are like those two things are tied. And so he's been always very money driven. And also that if he thinks he has like money status, where if he has enough money, he can make some of the problems go away, right? Mm. So that's how he finds safety, is in through his wealth and the influence that that can bring. Mm-hmm. And so for my brothers and some of the other guys in the church, I've seen how much pressure that's put on them, where they're expected to hit these certain milestones at certain times and find a wife and have kids and like do all of these things. And it's caused a lot of mental health problems in men as well. Yeah, but I actually didn't know that. I'd never given myself the option, because the only thoughts that I had was I could either get married or I could be like Paul and never get married. And that was ultimately the choice that I had made when I was a teenager. I was like, F this. If this is what relationships look like, I'm out. Yeah. So I had actually vowed that I was never going to get married. And I think I still have those journals somewhere where I wrote in big like letters all over the page, I am never, ever, ever getting married. And we were very involved in the church. So we'd go to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and then we'd have like a Bible study on Friday nights a lot of times. And my dad owned several businesses. So I've always said that I was lucky that I did have some financial education, because even though I was homeschooled and never went to school a day in my life, I did at least have that financial education, because we were reading things like How to Win Friends and Influence People and Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and like all of these different financial books. So I consider myself lucky in that regard. But with the whole view of LGBTQ community, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, and it's an ultimate sin and all of these things. And I think that that can play into our self, the way we see ourselves.
Definitely.
Because when we're raised as being told that we're lesser than, that can seep into our subconscious and kind of the way that we're built and wired. But I never gave myself the option to even think that I was anything other than straight, right? Because if you weren't straight, then something was wrong with you, air quotes. And I had become very close with a friend of mine who was also in the church. And I think we were 16, I would say 16, maybe 17. And they had come out as being lesbian. Like I remember sitting, watching this like creation versus evolution, like apologetics video in my dad's office building. And we're writing notes back and forth to each other. And they came out as being lesbian. And my initial reaction was like, it's okay. We're going to find God's healing. People have come out of this. Like, I'm going to help you and support you. And we're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
So then I went to the Institute of Basic Life Principles, Focus on the Family, these really conservative right-wing groups, and I got everything that they had on the subject. And I'm a researcher. I love to learn. Like, that's just what I do. So I dig in deep to, okay, how do we cure this, right? And even, I don't know how, but somehow through reading these super conservative materials on sodomy and same-sex relationships and all these things, I somehow started seeing that things weren't adding up. I was like, God is love. And that's like what we're here to do, is to learn how to love people and be like Jesus and do all of these things. And if God's our Father, how do we just condemn people and toss them out like that and make them, like, it just wasn't adding up. And I started to see patterns, I guess, in some of the stories that I was reading. And I was like, maybe it just didn't make sense. So I couldn't reconcile it. So instead of helping cure my best friend of lesbianism, I reached the point where I was really struggling. I was questioning my faith, because one of the things within this church that we grew up in was you weren't allowed to even go to the pastor if you had questions. The line to God was through your dad or your husband. Like, you couldn't even ask questions to church leaders. You had to ask your father or your husband, and then you could pray on it and do those sorts of things. But you as a woman don't understand what God might be trying to tell you. So you're probably going to misinterpret it, and you need a man's help with that. And so through all of this studying that I did, and it was probably a period of a year, things just started building up and building up and building up. And the more I questioned things, the more they didn't make sense. And my mom had always said, you know, God was like our father, and when I was a parent, I would understand. But I got to the point down the road when I did eventually leave and have kids of my own, I understood even less. And so I had ultimately reached a point where I just couldn't do it anymore. Like, my soul was being just stifled. I couldn't do it. So I knew I had to leave, or I wasn't going to make it. And so it was the hardest thing I'd ever had to do, especially up to that point, was to make the choice to leave my little brothers and sisters. Like, that was really the hardest point of it, because there was also some abuse in the household. And as the oldest, I felt responsible to try to protect them. But I knew I had reached that point where I wasn't going to make it. So I had to leave. And so I did. I chose to, the only way that I felt like I could get out was to sneak out in the middle of the night. So a mutual friend of mine and my best friend had came to get me. I took what I could take and never felt more free in my life.
Well, wow.
So much to unpack there.
There's a lot there. I'm picturing some of these documentaries that we've watched about these types of organizations and people who do that, literally grab whatever they have at their disposal, at their, you know, in their hands, and run, because that is the only option for them. Can I ask, I guess this is a personal question. When you say you don't think you would make it, does that mean that there was a potential suicide ideation?
Yes. I mean, I got to the point where I was like, I just couldn't. And I figured it was better to be gone than dead. So,
yeah.
So can we dive into that just a little bit? Can you explain how it became either this or that? Like, I know you said that you started to read more and you started to see the conflict and things weren't adding up for you. But can you explain a little bit more about what that feeling was, or what was going on in your mind when you were coming to this realization? Because it seems like from what you've shared before this interview and what you shared now, it's like, this is everything, all these revelations you're having are completely contradictory to everything that you've been told for the previous, I don't know, 16, 18 years, mm-hmm. up until that point. What was going on in your head exactly? Can you share a little bit more about what that feeling was like? Because it's almost like the veil was being lifted, right? And you're starting to realize,
absolutely,
that nothing is what they seem. And that's an interesting storyline in a movie, but when it's somebody's real life, it's very, I think, could be very overwhelming.
For sure. And being LGBTQ. So when I was through part of this process of growing up in this situation, my mom actually would have us girls like sit down and list all of the values that we were looking for in our husbands. And so it wasn't until after I left and my best friend and I were living with their aunt for a while that I realized my best friend actually had all of those qualities. And so that's kind of when that opened up to me as, well, maybe I don't need a man, right? Like maybe this person could actually be my partner because they had everything that I was looking for at that point. But when you're going through this unveiling of the truth, because one of the promises in the Bible that I do believe in is that the truth will set you free and you will find it when you are looking for it, it can lead to an identity reevaluation, if not crisis, because everything that you were taught up to that point has proven that maybe it's not quite the way you thought it was. And so through this period of this spiritual revelation that I'm having, or deconstruction is what is more often referred to, there were a lot of things going on outside of that too, because my family was talking about buying property in Missouri and moving there, which meant that I was going to be uprooted from everybody that I knew and loved and all of the stability that I had. And my best friend, their name is Danny, and they were the only person that actually knew me for who I was, because I had a very thick mask, because you were not allowed to show really any emotion other than like joy and gratitude and be like this happy, bubbly, everything is perfect, the happy, shiny people, right? Mm. And when things are not good at home, my dad was having affairs. He had a separate apartment. He had all these fancy cars. We'd see him maybe a couple of times a week. Like there were these inconsistencies going on. There was a period of time where my mom had locked herself in her room for probably a week and she was pregnant at the time. And so as the oldest, like I'm trying to maintain my schooling, right? Because we're basically given curriculum, which we go through, but my sister did fall behind in her education. And then I'm trying to help the younger kids. I'm trying to, you know, make the meals and keep the household running as a teenager, which I think I did fairly well, but I was really worried about my mom. And I know that she has had a lot that she has gone through too. And I think that she probably also reached a point where she felt like she couldn't move on anymore. And I feel like I, as her daughter, have seen this period where I've almost seen her soul disconnect at some point, because she's not the same person that she was when I was younger. You know, she used to be silly with us and do all these things. And I just feel like she doesn't have that same life in her anymore. And so there was, you know, these spiritual questionings and the religious questionings that I was having. I had, you know, you're not allowed to keep any secrets from your parents. So I had told my mom that Danny had told me that they were lesbian, right? And so then she goes into protective mode, like, well, does she have feelings for you? And like, my dad told me that I was going to have to break up my friendship and all of these things. And so between breaking up the friendship, moving to Missouri, these questions that I had, the life that I was being like forced into, that just, you know, you have that inner feeling and your soul's just telling you, you cannot go down that road. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of all of those things where I was like, I just can't. Like I stayed so much longer because of my siblings, but I knew I'd have reached a point where if I didn't take care of myself, I was going to be no use to anybody.
In the market for a new ride? Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I definitely appreciate that. I think most of our listeners will appreciate that. And folks, if you're at this point wondering what this podcast episode is about, please remember that, you know, John and I say that personal finance is two pieces. There is the finance part and there's the personal part. And the finance part is transactional and it's the same for every single one of us. And the personal part is the part of who we are and how we were raised and where we were raised and the circumstances of our lives, how that informs who we end up being when it comes to money. It is our money story, and it helps us or hinders us when it comes to money. So I appreciate you sharing that. You did mention that you did learn a little bit about money because you worked for your dad. When it comes to education and financial education, is that the only education, financial education you ever got?
I'm a learner, and so I can't not learn new things. And so I'm always learning new things, whether it's finance or spirituality or biochemistry or psychology, whatever the case may be.
Psychology. Above my pay grade.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because we just watched a short video on YouTube the other day talking about being, was it curious versus happy?
Yeah. No, wonder.
Wonder. Yeah. Always having a sense of wonder and always wanting to. Sometimes the sense of wonder is what we're really looking for when we say we want to be happy. And it sounds like you have this sense of wonder about how things work, how things are made, that kind of stuff, which I think is an amazing and great thing to have in your life. If you just accept everything the way it is, then you probably are going to end up in a cult.
Right? Yes, it's something that has served me well, because, you know, as I was coming out of the cult, I'd been working since I was 13 years old in my dad's businesses. And so I had reached a point where I had $13,000 cash when I left. And wow. I've been working since I was 13 years old. So I was able to get a good job. That's how I got into tax resolution. That was like my first career step after leaving. I was able to get us into an apartment. I was able to buy my first car in cash with that money that I had saved, you know, when I was living with my parents. And so I was off to a really good start. But because I had no boundaries, like boundaries were not allowed for women. And even though my partner and I, we eventually got married, we were up there the weekend it became legal in Iowa. And I, even though we were a same-sex couple, I took on the wifely role, because that's what I most closely identify to, I guess. But, you know, as the wife, it's my responsibility to make sure that they're taken care of and their emotional needs are met. And there was so much that I had to learn. That relationship taught me so, so much, even in regards to just self-love. And I couldn't say no, or I didn't say no. And they later transitioned. And so I refer to them as them, or he, him are the preferred pronouns now. And so going through all of that, they couldn't quite decide which career they wanted. So they started college courses, and then they decided they wanted to do something else. And then they decided they wanted to have kids. And, you know, being in the oldest 12, I was in no rush to have kids. But they told me that if I didn't have kids with them, they'd go co-parent with someone else. And that broke me. Hmm. And so we had tried for a while and it didn't take. And then I was like, okay, just like hit pause, like give me a second to wrap my head around this. And so I remember very distinctly having a conversation with myself, like, okay, if you choose to have kids, this is not something that is happening on accident. This is a very deliberate decision that you are making, and you know, the shiny is going to wear off, and you know that you're going to be left holding the bag. You are going to be the one that ends up ultimately responsible. And if you make this choice, you don't get to complain about it later. So these are conversations that I'm having with myself. And I think that it just is an example of how badly I lacked boundaries and the ability to just say no or take care of myself or do any of these things. And I don't regret that decision. It gave me two amazing daughters that I love very, very dearly. And they are why I do what I do. Like, they were part of the epiphanies that I have had. But, you know, it's an example of, you know, I bought cars that we couldn't afford. We moved into a house before we probably should have, because we, you know, didn't have adequate savings, but it was what they wanted. And so by the time we hit 2015, we had to file bankruptcy. And I wrote a book about part of this journey too. And I open up the book with this experience that I had where I was just laying in fetal position on the floor, sobbing under the carpet because I didn't have anything to feed my kids for dinner. I took a picture of my refrigerator because that relationship didn't last. And we had gotten we separated in 2016. We'd filed bankruptcy. I didn't have a car. I went out one night and it was gone because they had taken it back through the bankruptcy. The next morning, I had to walk my kids 6 miles to daycare so that a coworker could come pick me up and take me to work because I had to get to work. And I ended up in this position where it was just my 2 kids and my job, and that was it. My relationship had failed. Right before we lost the apartment, I took a picture of my refrigerator and it was basically empty. I had a few eggs, a small bowl of peas that were left over, maybe quarter gallon of milk and some condiments in the fridge. And that was basically it. And I took a picture of it and I put it on Facebook where only I could see it, but it would show up in my memories. Yeah. And I said, dear future self, how the heck did we get ourselves out of this? In that moment, I promised myself that once I got to the other side, I would tell other people what it was that I did so that hopefully they wouldn't make the same mistakes that I did, but at least they would be able to recover faster. And so that's why I'm so open about sharing my story and what I've had to go through, because these are very painful lessons I had to learn the hard way. And I want to inspire other people that just because you might be going through a really hard chapter in your book, that's not the end of the book, or at least it doesn't have to be. Like, there's so much more into life than just living, not even paycheck to paycheck. So that's, you know, that financial recovery was also a personal journey too, and so much personal growth. And that's ultimately what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. It's obvious that you feel this story still today because it's connecting with us so strongly. I'm curious to dive back into the money side of things. It sounds like you did have some exposure to personal finance, and obviously you could save enough to save that $13,000. How, up to that point, how good would you say your education in personal finance was? Would you say it was pretty thorough? Would you say you had a rudimentary understanding, or your expert level?
Maybe not expert level, but I felt like I was pretty good with personal finance. Like, I knew how to balance a checkbook and how to budget. I knew concepts like compound interest and, you know, the cash flow quadrant and things like that. So I felt like I had a decent understanding of at least the intermediate, maybe.
Yeah. So when you found yourself in this place where you had this freedom and suddenly you didn't have any boundaries imposed on you, were you starting to feel any conflict with how you two were using your money and where this was headed? Or were you just kind of, you know, I think, like, to the extent that your story does parallel to mine and David's at all, we had all the expert knowledge, the theoretical knowledge about how finance and money worked, but we were not living that way in any way, shape, or form. So I'm just kind of understanding, like, was your story similar in that, yeah, you had this knowledge, but you were still just trying to get over the trauma of your childhood and that you just couldn't put those boundaries on yourself just yet?
Yeah, I made choices that I knew were not the best choices to make. So for example, my partner was having some digestion issues, and so they wanted to go see a nutritionist. And this nutritionist, I think, was like $3,000. Like, it was thousands of dollars to get these tests and whatnot. And so I pulled money out of my 401k to pay for all of these testings and the diet and all of those things. And it is a conflict because you don't want to pull your investment resources to put into something like that. But they didn't have a stable income that was coming in, so they couldn't pay for it themselves. It was my job, quote unquote, to take care of all of their needs. And so those were decisions that I made. Another decision that I made was buying cars that I did not want. And I balked at it a little bit, but no boundaries. And so we still got that car, even though it's in my name and, you know, my credit. And they were also tied to it, but they couldn't really get it without my income and things like that. And so it was a inner conflict, but our traumas make us go against what we know is better. And there's certain wirings that go into place that are hard to combat when you're not aware of why you're doing those things exactly. Because I think that in the LGBTQ community, you've talked on your podcast before about knowing your value. And you've also talked about how a lot of people don't necessarily have an income problem, but a spending problem. And I've seen that this value and understanding your own personal value can really go two different ways. You might be overspending, which is what I had done, buying the cars and the houses and the bags and the shoes and all of these other things to prove, air quotes, that you are good enough to be part of that group, because maybe you've been told that you would never fit in or that you weren't good enough or you were bullied. And so you're trying to buy that approval to a certain extent. But it can also go the other direction of maybe not asking for the raise or not putting in that job application because you don't feel like you're good enough. And so that's one of the things that I'm trying to get the word out on, is you are good enough. Like, you have all of these experiences and knowledge and interests that nobody else is just like you. And you've got a value that nobody else can bring. And so go for it. Stop telling yourself no before other people tell you no.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to ask a personal question. I'm going to give you the option not to answer this. And just listening to the way that you're describing yourself and your relationship with the person you were with, and I kind of almost feel like you two may have settled into a little bit of the role expectations that were similar to when you were in the cult of, as you said, I accepted the wife role, they accepted, I'm assuming then, the husbandly role, and we know what that relationship or that dynamic was within the cult. Did you feel like you couldn't stand up for yourself? Like, you couldn't question, you couldn't say, hey, this isn't right? And that is a part of your money story, is the fact that this is, I felt more comfortable getting back into this role that I thought I, or that I had been taught I should be practicing. And they maybe moved into the role that they thought that they should be practicing based on maybe their gender identity or their gender expression.
Yes. So the other thing that plays into that is conflict, because conflict was physically dangerous when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So that sense of conflict is suppressed. Like, you don't want to rock the boat. You're always walking on eggshells, because if you rock the boat and you put a boundary in place, they might get upset. One, they might leave, and then you're never going to be loved ever again. And you'll just spend the rest of your life in solitude and misery, right? Like, these are the stories that we're telling ourselves.
Right.
Or two, they might get upset. And even though I knew that they would never be physically abusive, like, I still had that wiring from the way that I had grown up. And so it didn't feel safe. And to be quite frank, this is something that I am still very much aware of. My husband now, his name's Joe, he is the most patient, kind, stable person you could ever possibly hope to meet. And it's still hard for me to speak up sometimes. Like, I have to have these pep talks with myself. Like, okay, you can do this. This is what we're going to say. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to make sure the timing's right. That it's something that doesn't necessarily come easy without practice. And it's something that I have to work on. And it would be curious to hear Danny's, my first husband's experience, and kind of how he felt about that, because I'm not sure what his perspective is. And that would be really interesting for me to know too. But I certainly fell into the wifely role of taking care of everybody and not having those boundaries. Don't rock the boat because it's not safe.
Yeah. It's, as you were telling the story, I thought to myself, I would love to get their story too, because it would, and to match it up. Because I do, what I think is kind of interesting, and you probably can't answer this, is I wonder how easy it was for them to sort of move into the husbandly role, if that's what they ended up doing, not having grown up with that sort of expectation. That's an interesting story there too.
Yeah.
But I know we probably can't answer that here.
Right. I wish I could. That might be something that we'd have to dig into, because we did grow up in the church together, and it would be interesting to see what those thoughts were kind of settling into that.
I will say, one of the things that I did love about what you were talking about during your rock bottom moment is the fact that I don't know if personal responsibility or taking ownership is necessarily the right label for this, but when you talked about taking that picture and posting it on Facebook so that no one else would see it, but only you would see it and you would get those reminders, I thought to myself, wow, that is a powerful way. You know, oftentimes we go through traumatic experiences, and for lack of a better way of saying it, many of us continue to just relive that trauma and feel sorry for ourselves because of that trauma. You actually said, this was a traumatic experience that I lived through. I'm going to park it in front of myself. So as a reminder to never let this happen again to myself, to stay away from the thinking, or at least try to stay away from the thinking that let you get into that. So I appreciate that. Have you continued to do that? Because it seems like to me that would be such a smart thing to do on a regular basis. Take these pictures and post them to your Facebook memories so that from time to time you get a reminder of something you're grateful for, something that was traumatic, something that you learned from, something, all these life experiences that nobody else needs to know that you're kind of documenting for yourself and why you're documenting them for yourself. But I love that. Do you keep doing it?
I do. I also journal. So each of my kids have a journal too, where I write to them like little memories and like, hey, you should probably watch out for this as you get older. And then I'll give those to them when they graduate high school or become an adult. But when I had gone through the divorce, I was like, if I ever put myself through this again, it's going to be worth it. So I started making a list of, again, all of the things that were non-negotiables for me if I was ever to go into a relationship again. And I ended up with getting frustrated. I was like, well, hell, if this person doesn't exist, we're really going to shoot for the moon. And I put some frivolous things on there too, and ended up with a list of like 33 things. And my husband has 32 of those 33 things. But
oh, he fell
when
short.
I was, he didn't own his own business, which was on there. But when I was digging into why that was important to me, it was because I wanted them to be ambitious and like have these goals and dreams and things to work towards, which is which he has. And that's, so he ultimately has all 33 things if we dig into it. But like when I was single, I would put something on there like, don't you ever take this person for granted. Like, because I knew that I think that some of us just have this inner gut feeling that something is meant to be or not to be. And so for me, I knew that this person was going to show up. Little did I know, I'd already known him for a couple of years, but I would put on there like, someday, maybe you're going to have a grandparent or your kiddos that are going to make them cookies. And so I'd put stuff like that on Facebook where only I could see it. And then a couple of years later, my husband's mom is in the kitchen baking cookies with my kiddos and those types of things. So yes, I do still utilize that as reminders for the things that are difficult, to not take things for granted, but also to just express the gratitude for the amazing relationships that I've been lucky enough to develop.
I'm just going to say, I absolutely implore you all to do this kind of thing, to post things that you will be your reminders of how grateful for you are for the good things that you have in your life. Because it's so easy for us to get used to the conversations in our head, especially because of the stories we have of how we were raised or the culture we were raised in about how horrible life is. It's so important to balance that with the really good things that have happened in our life, because it's naturally, our mentally, we spend more time and effort thinking about the bad things in our life, and we pass over or think a lot less about the good things that have happened in our life. So we need some sort of trigger there that says, yeah, you got a good life sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So you talked a little bit about, you hit your rock bottom. There was hardly any food in the refrigerator. You had to file for bankruptcy. What were the initial steps that you took to say, okay, we're gonna turn this thing around because it can't keep going in the trajectory that we are?
Are you ready for some fireworks?
Okay. Yeah, totally. Yeah. We haven't had fireworks yet.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, interesting story so far. I don't know. You're going to impress us even more.
Do I need to refill my coffee?
So it's not going to seem really impressive, but honestly, the first step was I had to change the way that I was talking to myself. And the epiphany that I had, like, we had this cherry red Chevy HHR. I called it the cherry red hearse because this was one of the cars I bought that I should not have bought. And I hated this car. It was always breaking down. I had to go buy a new piece for it. My kids were little. I think they were like 9 months and maybe two. It was after work. They were hangry, crying. I had to go to the auto shop and pick up another piece. And I came out, and you know how I don't know if you do this, but I grumble to myself sometimes when I'm grouchy. And I was like, I can't go get another job and we're just always going to be broke because Danny won't watch the kids. And what I realized there was that I was saying, I can't go do something. And I wasn't using the right words. I could go do something. I could go find somebody else to babysit the kids. I could go get a second job. The real word was I wouldn't, because I was walking on eggshells. And it was like that light bulb moment that I realized I was in the words I was using, shifting the blame to somebody else. And I was making myself a victim of circumstance. And so in that moment, I promised myself that I was only going to tell myself the truth. So instead of saying, I can't, I was going to say, I won't, because then it becomes a choice. You have the option to do something about it. And if you make the choice, then you get the reward or consequence of whatever that choice is going to be. But it was not, I was not like going to shift the blame to somebody else. And learning that we can't control other people, because that's one of the things that we humans really like to do, because it seems easier to try to change somebody else in the things that we don't really have control over versus changing ourselves and taking responsibility for what we do have the ability to change and stop making those excuses. That was really hard to learn. But that was, quite frankly, the first step that I had to use was I had to get honest with myself.
That is so powerful. And I think it is a fireworks moment, because I think for so many of us, we're looking for something grander and bigger outside of ourselves to change our situation. We're looking for this person to be the president, or this law to change, or, for
boss to give us a big raise,
or we get a big raise or whatever, or we finally become insta-famous or whatever the case. We're always looking for something outside of ourselves. And what I'm hearing you saying, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's all inside of you and it's not going to change until you change.
100%.
The circumstances of your life aren't going the direction that you'd like them to do. I mean, we've all gone through traumatic times. We've all gone through challenging times. We can go into a victim Olympics to decide of who's had more traumatic experiences than others, but that's really not going to get us anywhere. If we're not on the path to achieving what we want, or we don't have the life that we want, you're saying it starts inside.
100%.
I mean, that's a swallow hard moment.
That's at the root of it. I think of everybody's money story is, you know, whatever the challenges are. I mean, you can kind of almost interpret what you've been telling yourself your whole life by your current circumstances. And it takes that inward reflection to say, okay, if I'm not exactly happy with this, whether it's, you know, specifically my money story, then what can I do to change it? Because I do have options. If I'm telling myself I don't have options, I'm just disempowering myself and looking for something external to save me. And that's likely never going to happen. It only happens to, a few people.
It's interesting the way we're talking about this, because folks, this is reminding me of episode, I think it's episode 73, when Dominique Jackson, who is famous for being on Pose and Slay, was on the podcast.
Right.
And it was very much the same kind of conversation going on in her head when she said, I need to take care of myself. I need to leave Trinidad and Tobago. I need to go to a place where I can, first of all, feel physically safe. Then I can start working on the stuff that will make me feel whole. And now we look at her and think she's got everything and everybody is so jealous, but we don't understand that it all started with the conversation that she had in her head. And the same thing with you, you know, going from your rock bottom moment. I think that that's what really a rock bottom moment is. A rock bottom moment is when you finally say to yourself, change the way you're fucking thinking about yourself and the way you talk to yourself, right? You need to change. And only you can do it, right? And that's maybe that's what a rock bottom moment is, whether it's drugs and alcohol, spending, relationships, whatever it is. When you hit that rock bottom moment, it's when you need to say, I'm ready to make the changes that are most important to me being my full self.
Yes. And there's a process that I have used, because when we get... So one of the best books I've ever read on trauma is What Happened to You by Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah. And he talks about how our brains are like an upside down triangle. And the upper parts of our brains are more creative thinking parts of our brain. And as you go down the triangle, that goes into our like bodily functions and our survival. And as we get stressed, those upper creative parts of our brains start shutting down and we go into survival mode. And so when we're constantly stressed about money or our circumstances or our job, we're not fully opening up our creative abilities or different ways to think about things or to solve a problem. So one of the methods that I have used a lot is when I am feeling overwhelmed or frustrated, I have a journal that I just word vomit in and I vent and I get all of the nasty, ugly, mean things out on paper. And then I take a breath and I was like, okay, if I had a magic wand, what would this situation look like? And I would write down what my ideal situation would look like. And then I take another breath. What's one small thing I can do right now to put me down that path? And if you're frustrated with your job, it might be update your resume. It might be go to a networking event. It might be talk to that past boss that you have a good relationship with and see if they know of any job openings. Like, changing your life isn't this big, scary fireworks moment. It is one small step today and another one small step tomorrow and another one the day after that. And then my day might suck, but then you're back at it again. And you just keep getting just a little bit better every day. And then you're going to look back 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, and you're going to be like, wow, I've actually come really far.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
That is so true. It, you know, I think it's the fault of movies is that like there's like this hour and a half or 2 hours of a movie and this person's life completely changes on a dime. And we're like, that's what I'm waiting for that to happen. But that's just not real life. It, I think to your point, it is that there's micro steps that you take every single day. And you know, the first couple of steps is going to feel hard and miserable, maybe, but the more you take them, eventually it's going to be a complete 180 for you.
I also appreciate your process of taking all that crap that is just flying around in your brain that is blocking you from actually thinking about how you could make progress and getting it out. Just flood it out on the paper, and you're literally making space in your brain to say, okay, now I can think about the other things.
And that's what I think vomit is actually the best word to use for that. Cause it's part of that's what
purging
is, right? It's getting the poison out of your system. It's getting the bad stuff out. So hopefully the good stuff can start working. What was the name of that book again? Cause we're getting it today.
What Happened to You by Dr. Bruce Perry and okay. Oprah.
I love how you say Dr. Bruce Perry, like you've got to say his entire name and all you have to do is say Oprah. And everybody's like, oh, I know you're talking about it.
Boom. Well, Oprah, Cher, Madonna.
She's iconic.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to sneak in the Madonna reference there. Let me ask you, you may look back on certain circumstances in your life. You know, say, for example, the fact that, and I don't know, did you ever go to college? Have you gone to college?
I took one sociology class. That's the only formal education that I've had.
Yeah. And you chose sociology?
Yes.
That's curiosity, right? That's wonder, right? There are a lot of LGBT folks, especially folks who were raised in religion and stuck around in that religion for a longer time period, who didn't necessarily go to college. Do you ever feel sorry for yourself because of that?
Sometimes I do. I mean, I could have, it was kind of tricky because when you leave, when you're 19, 20, colleges still want all of your parents' information. So I wouldn't qualify for the financial aid because of my parents' income, which they weren't going to give me. And there were probably ways around that, but I didn't know how to get to it at the time. So sometimes I wonder what life would have been like if I had gone to college, because I would imagine I'd get my doctorates in psychology. But ultimately, I decided to go the licensing route. And so since my first job was in tax resolution, I became an enrolled agent, which basically allows you to practice before the IRS. So I would work with companies and individuals who got themselves into tax trouble and help them figure out how to get out of that. And then I took some accounting courses and got some certifications in that. And then eventually I moved into more of the traditional financial roles and got licenses in that aspect. But one thing that I would encourage people to look at is if you feel like college has not been an option for you, there's really two directions that you can go. There are 36, I believe, states that offer scholarships, grants, or some kind of tuition-free programs or licenses or enrollments or certifications for people to start getting into careers that they really need people in. So nursing, early childhood education, firefighters, law enforcement. I know here in Colorado, the state has a program where people can get certified in those fields because they need people so badly. But I think that before you even really go into that, it's just getting a little curious about yourself. Like, what are your interests? What are you good at? What skills do you have? Because then that will help you narrow down what path to go in. And You had mentioned in an earlier episode when you were talking about, you know, venture capitalist and getting funding, where your guest was going into the cannabis industry, and how it was very synchronistic because he had gone to a dinner with a very knowledgeable person who was talking about the benefits of cannabis. And then he, you know, was able to kind of, through different synchronicities, get into this whole other industry that he really loves and enjoys. And so I think that just following your interests and being open and curious about those things can lead you down paths that you never would have imagined were available to you. And just get a little curious about yourself and see what's out there.
Somebody listens to our show.
I was just going to say.
You're the person.
No, but I do really appreciate what you're saying. From personal experience, when I came out, I was 26. And I went and got a full-time job before I came out because I didn't have any money saved because I was serving God. And so all of my time was spent serving God. So I was barely getting by financially. Literally, I had to ask my parents for money on a regular basis. And they were happy to do it because I was serving God. But when I came out, there was a time period there where I literally, on top of not feeling like I was good enough because I was a gay man, I was also not feeling good enough because I didn't have an education. Right? I didn't have a college education. I go to networking events or I go to talk with people at work. I will be honest, I actually lied a number of times to people saying that I had an education or parts of an education that I didn't.
So did George Santos, and it worked out well for him.
Yeah, I don't know about how well it worked out for him. Thank God I'm not doing cameos to try to make enough money to live on.
He's expensive now.
But I do appreciate that you basically are giving us telling people what some options are. That there are options out there. If you're a queer, especially younger queer people who don't have money and have come out, have left a family situation or a situation where they had to get out for their physical safety or mental safety, this is an important thing to think about. You don't have to go borrow $100,000 to get education so that you can make enough money to be able to pay back that $100,000 and live paycheck to paycheck. There are lots of ways to get yourself started. And to be clear, I didn't go back to college until I was 29. And thankfully, I learned a few things. And one of those things was that I worked for a company that would pay for almost all of my schooling as long as I went to a low-cost school. And I did. And I appreciate the fact that you're sharing that there are always, almost always, opportunities. We just may not be able to see them right now or right in front of us. And that's why it's important to give yourself the opportunity to explore a little bit and to learn a little bit before you make these kind of major life decisions.
And the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, has a list of different scholarships that are available for the LGBTQ community as well. And I think that it's also important to note that I'm always asking myself, how can I add more value? Whether that's in a job that I'm doing, whether it's my personal value, whether it's something that I'm learning. But I think that it's important to not underestimate the importance of having a good work ethic and showing up to work on time and having good communication skills and being a good listener, because that will help you build relationships that can lead to those lucky opportunities, right? And so it's being prepared and having that ability to take some action when those opportunities do come up.
Yeah. Well, that's what Oprah always says, right? Luck is really preparation meeting opportunity. Yep. And you're saying focus on the preparation, because when the opportunity comes, such as you're having dinner with friends and a fancy wine and somebody's super knowledgeable about the cannabis industry, and all of a sudden you've got $11 million industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll also add, I know that we are right now in a culture, work culture, where a lot of people feel like adding more value is something that they don't want to do because they already feel like their company is taking advantage of them. But one of the interesting things that you just kind of, I took from what you just said, is that when we think about the ways that we can add value, we're actually looking at things that we don't necessarily know how to do today, right? How do I add more value, which is how can I get a little bit more curious about something I'm interested in and add that to the where I work or what I do today, right? Learning something that nobody on your team knows, but you're interested in. That is a way that you could actually be impress the people who make the decisions as to who gets the raise or who gets the bonus, right? And you're doing it for yourself, right? You're doing it because you're curious. You're doing it because you're interested in it. You're not doing it so that you can make the shareholders richer or you can make your boss look good. You're actually doing it for yourself. The side benefits are that there's a possibility it may give you a promotion or it may give you a raise or may give you a bonus.
And you work yourself into a career that you actually love and enjoy instead of a job that you dread going to on Monday morning.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, you had this complete transformation in your life. It sounds like you had some major challenges to overcome and it seems like you've overcome them quite successfully. Who you are today, what would you tell your 12, 15, 18-year-old self and what they were going through and thinking at that time?
I would tell her, just do the best you have with what you have today. And when you know better, do better.
I love that.
Kind of similar to what Maya Angelou says.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Yes.
When you know better, do better.
Exactly.
I love that.
So where are you at today? Tell us about what you're doing with your money story today.
One of my purposes in following, you know, what I'm interested in, my background, there's a podcaster I listen to, his name's Ed Milet, and he talks about how our experiences put us in a position that we are uniquely qualified to help people who we used to be just like. And so I now sit on the board of trustees for a local family shelter here in the Springs, Family Promise. I get to provide them with trauma-informed financial education. And that's ultimately what my company, Be Your Money Hero, does. It's just, I want to get this information out there so that people know, regardless of what your story looks like right now, that's just the starting point. Like, there's so much more that you could be meant for or do. And so don't settle. Just take a look at what that ideal situation would be and just do one small step today, just one small thing. And so it's just sharing my story. I hope that it makes a difference for other people because I see this shift in, there's another book that I'll recommend. It's called It Didn't Start With You. And he talks about generational trauma and how for 3 to 4 generations, our parents and our grandparents' traumas can actually be wired within us. And so we react in certain ways because of that trauma. But we're starting to come out of that. And as we're coming out of the Depression and World War II generational DNA wirings, we're seeing society shift with that. And so instead of just working for one company all of our life and relying on a pension, I'm seeing more and more people working themselves into careers that they actually love and enjoy and being able to, they don't necessarily want traditional retirement. They want to work when they want, how they want, for who they want, doing work that they love. And that's what I want to encourage and help people with, is just giving them that safe space to get curious about themselves so they can actually lean into who they truly are versus what society tells them they are or not, or what they should or should not be.
I really appreciate that. I love that you talked about the fact that this generational trauma can be a part of us today, because I think that generational trauma is still a part of the corporate structure that so many of us work under, right? So we still work for companies that are run by, in many cases, men who may have actually served in World War II or in the Korean War or in the Vietnam War, right? So their way of thinking, they don't think the way that younger people think today. And so the way in which they run their companies and what their expectations are and what their expectations of workers are is oftentimes still steeped in this culture of, you need to work here for 30 years. You need to be happy that you have a job. Sometimes life is a bowl of lemons and just you have to deal with it, right? You know, just all of those kinds of things are still baked into a lot of the structures, the systemic structures that we deal with today. And we are trying to break free from those or grow out of those. So I appreciate that. Again, what's the name of your company?
Be Your Money Hero.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely link to that. I will say, this has probably been one of the most exciting episodes that we have recorded in a while, just because of the personal connection I think I have to some of parts of your story, but also just the way in which you talk about things and describe things that you've gone through and that you do for yourself on a regular basis. It's just so valuable to our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. So how can our listeners connect with you if they'd like to?
So I'm on almost all of the social media platforms at Be Your Money Hero. You can also find me at beyourmoneyhero.com. And I also have a podcast also called The Same Thing. And the goal of that podcast is to really give people a safe space where they can open up about how their history and their wiring has shaped the way that they relate to money and how they can take more control of it.
Love that. Cool. Well, we'll link to all that as well. So thank you so much for reaching out, agreeing to, you know, we put an email out to our email list and said, who would be open to sharing their personal story? And we didn't get a lot of biters, but we did get one really good one. And we're thankful that we did. So thank you very much for having the courage to share this and coming on our show.
Thanks for having me.
With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC.
Thank you for joining us for another episode. This week's newsletter includes your Queer Money takeaway as well as resources mentioned in this episode.
And then make sure you join us Thursday for another bonus episode and next Tuesday when we talk more about LGBTQ retirement and our Retirement 101 series.
Thank you and have an amazing week.